I don't wanna be the boy that runs in the back. I don't wanna be the kid that falls in the dark. All I really want to be is the guy that gets that girl.
Welcome to the AJ Steele Show. We discuss politics, sex, money, and everything in between. And now, here's your host, an immigrant, a self-made millionaire, an American, AJ Steele. Everything I say and do, I'm just
not good. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the AJ Steele Show. First of all, I wanted to thank all of you who listened and watched our last episode, which hit top 30 in the US. This is incredible news for us, especially considering all the corporate competition that we have. And it's a real great honor for me to know that there's so many of you out there listening and subscribing to us. Now, before I go into my full soliloquy or monologue or whatever you want to call it, let me mention that today's show features a great interview with Jonathan Tobin, the editor-in-chief of the JNS. And as the show goes on, I'll tell you a little bit more about it. My friends, when I was preparing for this interview, I was thinking to myself that there isn't much that can be said about the war between Israel and Hamas and the Iranians and the Houthis that all the media pundits out there haven't already told you. But with every passing day, I get the sense that there's a lot more about this war and the Biden White House's involvement in it than we know. Is it really a coincidence that the October 7th attacks occurred right around the time when the State Department and a bunch of left-wing NGOs were fomenting civil war against Israel's right-wing prime minister, who was just elected in a landslide? Is it a coincidence that the Biden administration, which is desperate for the Muslim vote, just started leaking plans to throw Israel under the bus and declare a Palestinian state? I know a lot of this is conjecture, and perhaps some of it is conspiracy theorizing on my end, but stranger things have happened with this administration, and all of you who listen to our show are aware of that. Now, I can't guarantee that what I just told you is correct, but it's absolutely within the realm of possibility. Now, possibilities and conjecture aside, I can tell you some things about the Middle East that happen to be 100% factual and verifiable. I can tell you that the level of cruelty and joy that the Palestinian people derive from massacring innocent Israelis would make the worst Hollywood slasher film appear like a Sunday morning cartoon by comparison. But you already know that. Burning babies alive, cutting off the breasts of women while raping them, and the torture and killing of parents in front of their kids is not something that any normal human being with a heart can even begin to understand. I can tell you that the Hamas terrorists are Palestinians and that the Palestinians are Hamas. There's no difference. They're interchangeable. And I can also tell you that the constant media drumbeat telling us that most Palestinians are innocent civilians is a lie. It doesn't reflect any kind of truth. It doesn't reflect the reality on the ground. But most of you with a working brain already know that. I could tell you that Iran is behind each and every war going on in the Middle East today, including over 170 attacks on American forces and the killing of three of them. Three brave Americans were killed because of Iran. And I could also tell you that if Iran is taken out, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, those Iraqi militias will fold. They'll disappear very quickly. But anyone with a fifth grade level education and an ounce of logic already knows that and knows the fact that for some very strange reason, the Obama-Biden administration, yes, the Obama-Biden administration, always ends up taking Iran's side over the side of all of America's friends. And to be honest, over the side of America. It's bizarre. There's a lot more truths out there. And perhaps none more important than the fact that Islam and most of its followers are completely incompatible with the West. There is no way in hell that the Islamists can blend in with Americans and become peaceful, contributing members of society. There's no way. And most of you already know that, but you still choose to ignore the truth because you're holding on to some kind of arrogant bullshit notion or some kind of a misguided 60s idealism that tells you that we're all the same and we all want the same thing. We don't. And they sure don't. Look, I can tell you all of these things over and over and over again until I'm blue in the face. But it's up to you to make the leap from simply stating that you know which way is up to actually doing something about it. Because no one out there is going to save us but ourselves. And I don't care if you're a Christian or a Jew or a non-denominational patriot. Start speaking out. And don't speak out with a shy, apologetic voice, but with a strong confidence and conviction of someone who knows that the truth is on their side, because the truth is on our side. Last week, I tweeted the following words, and I'd love to see someone even dare to try and challenge them. I wrote, and I quote, "America and Europe took in millions of Arabs. Did they really expect them not to act like Arabs? I don't give a rat's ass about the feelings of people who want to destroy my family and my nation, and neither should you. When did it become so fashionable to fight wars based on proportionality or pity for the other side? I mean, who invented this nonsense that we should take it easy on our enemies because they're weaker than us? And I don't want to hear a single word from any of you liberals who will all of a sudden become Christian scholars, and you know exactly who you are. You're the weasels who religiously listen to each and every episode of our show and pretend not to. You're the same cowardly betas who email me a bunch of your impotent threats. And I'm not scared of any of you. I know all of you fakers who become pious all of a sudden and start quoting scripture when you think it fits your narrative. We should take it easy on our enemies. After all, didn't Jesus say, turn the other cheek? Well, first of all, I'm not Jesus. And second of all, I want you to show me a single time in history when Christian nations turned their other cheeks to their enemies who tried to annihilate them. Look, I don't care if we flatten the Palestinians and Iran and bomb them back to the Stone Age where they belong, just like we did with the Germans and the Japanese. I don't care if we send them packing out of America or out of Gaza. If they love Islam so much, let them move there to the Arab countries with their fellow cutthroats. Instead of living off the largesse of the American taxpayer while they have the gall to turn our streets and universities into 12th century battle zones, send them and their violent racist beliefs back to the Middle East. And don't let the door kick them in the ass. Look, I can be as nice or as polite as the rest of the so-called conservative hosts. And I can try to have a logical discussion about history or about human nature and literature and philosophy and civil society. But I'm not Ben Shapiro and I'm not Tucker Carlson. I'm also not going to start sitting around the campfire singing Kumbaya and eating hummus to virtue signal how much I love diversity. Because I'm not a brain-dead progressive. And because none of that nonsense will save us. None of it saved the lovey-dovey Israeli lefties when the Palestinian savages broke into their homes on October 7th. Talk is very cheap. It didn't save them, and it won't save us. We are in an existential war for the survival of the West. And it's either us or them. Nothing else matters. My dear listeners, I know that I get worked up when I do these shows. I really do. But I just can't go on ranting forever because it will get boring very quickly and I'm going to end up losing my voice, which I think I just started doing. So I'm going to try to calm myself down during the break. And when we get back to you, we will be joined by Jonathan Tobin, who is the editor-in-chief of the Jewish News Syndicate, also known as JNS. I have personally followed his work and the work of some of his journalists for a long time, including the essays of the fabulous Ruthie Bloom, whom we've had the great pleasure of interviewing in the past, and Caroline Glick, whom we hope to interview in the future. Needless to say, I am very glad to have Jonathan on our show, and I know that all of you in our audience will learn a lot from what he has to say. I am AJ Steele, and this is the AJ Steele Show.
The AJ Steele Show. Think of your loudmouth best friend, hated by all the wives, because he tells it just like it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, today's guest, Jonathan Tobin, is the editor-in-chief of the Jewish News Syndicate, also known as the JNS, and he's a columnist who's appeared on BBC Radio, Fox News, CNN, and Newsmax, and many other print publications. I've followed his work for many years, and I'm very glad to have him on our show. Jonathan Tobin, welcome to the AJ Steele Show.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So let me start off with an interesting question. Our show is not a Jewish-themed podcast, and we like to book all kinds of guests from different backgrounds and varying viewpoints because, frankly, I don't care to be pigeonholed. And realistically, our audience comes from all walks of life. But to me, it seems that it's much easier for us to book high-caliber guests from the Jewish community than from any other group. I asked my wife, Mrs. Steele, why she thinks that is, and her flippant answer was that we Jews just really like to talk. And she's not necessarily wrong, but I think it's a lot deeper than that. Every anti-Semite in the world claims that Jews own the media. And yet I think that right-leaning voices and conservative Jewish voices in particular are being completely ignored and blacklisted by the mainstream media. It's almost like we have nowhere to go to speak our minds. What are your thoughts on this topic?
Well, I think it's true that Jewish conservatives have often been erased, certainly by the liberal corporate media and to some extent in conservative media, although there obviously are exceptions. And, we find our way in, but I think there is a certain degree of stereotyping as to what you can expect from people who, represent Jewish organizations or Jewish media. But all we can do is to keep talking, keep in the fight, keep speaking up. I don't waste a lot of my time worrying about who doesn't want to listen to me or read what I'm doing or see what JNS is publishing. I have more than one outlet, and I'm a senior contributor to The Federalist, and I write for Newsweek as well. But, the point is, we just have to keep at it. This is a very crucial time in history where the perspective of those who understand what is going on in the Middle East, who understand what's happening here, this atrocious surge in anti-Semitism and with what is really behind it, which is often obfuscated by most of those in the chattering classes. So I think we have to keep fighting, keep at it. And as for who's trying to silence us, we know some of those who are trying to do it, but in the end, they're not going to succeed.
So now that we got through explaining where things really are and why alternative media such as ours is the fastest growing segment of American news and political commentary, let's start talking about the U.S. and about the war in Israel. Now, we all know that there's an election coming up here in less than a year, and there's a chance that most Jewish Americans will automatically vote for the Democrats. What grade do you give to Joe Biden for his handling of the Middle East and Israel in particular?
It's an interesting. I haven't been asked to put a grade on it yet. And I don't want to grade with a curve. I'd have to give him maybe a C plus, which is far higher than I would have given him on October 6th. Mm-hmm. Prior to October 7th, this administration had done everything wrong in the Middle East, from alienating the Saudis, from trying to revive the Obama administration's policies of appeasement of Iran, which set in motion a whole series of damaging events, including appeasing Hezbollah in Lebanon, taking the Houthis off the terrorist list, and forcing the Saudis to shut down their military pressure on the Houthis, which has certainly come back to bite the United States now. Basically, Biden had done everything, not only to undermine American interests in the Middle East, but to set up the circumstances under which Hamas thought they could benefit from an attack on Israel. And so, you know, I might have given him, you know, a D minus or an F on October 6th. But to be fair, since October 7th, his grade has been middling, which is to say that he has stuck to a position of support for Israel, which was, you know, not necessarily what most of the people in his party wanted him to do or want him to do to even now. He has continued to give at least rhetorical support to the goal of eliminating Hamas, which is the key point here. Hamas must be destroyed in Gaza. They cannot be allowed to still be standing and in control of any part of Gaza when the shooting stops. And again, to the credit of Biden and to the rest of his foreign policy team, they've stuck to that. Now, at the same time, they've been talking out of both sides of their mouth about it. And the reason for that is not only their inveterate hostility to Netanyahu, to Prime Minister Netanyahu and his government, which they did everything they could to undermine in the year before, in the 10 months before October 7th, they intervened in Israeli politics. Not the first time an American government has done that, trying to topple Netanyahu, support the people in the streets trying to protest him, taking a stand on judicial reform in Israel, which was not only the complete opposite of what his stand on the judiciary in the United States is, but which was utterly illogical. But since then, he has held his ground in at least, you know, the basic stand of support for Israel. But, you know, he's got a big problem. And, you know, it can be summed up, you know, with one word, Michigan. The left wing of his party, the activist base, the whole intersectional wing of the Democratic Party is against support for Israel. They have bought into the whole woke ideology, and that's the whole key to understanding this issue. The people who support critical race theory, intersectionality, which has translated into believing that the Palestinian war to destroy the one Jewish state on the planet is analogous to the struggle for civil rights in the United States. There is a whole broad array of activists, not just in the streets chanting for genocide of the Jews and from the river to the sea and globalize the Intifada, but the entire staff of his administration below the undersecretary level. Because all of these left-wing activists who are now part of the Democratic governing class have been indoctrinated in woke ideas that see Jews and Israel as white oppressors and the Palestinians as people of color who are victims, which is a complete lie and has nothing to do with the real story in the Middle East. But they're in open revolt against this administration. And indeed, Arab Americans, and not just left-wing voters, and there's a tremendous lack of enthusiasm among left-wing voters and young voters who have been similarly indoctrinated in woke ideology for Biden because of his stand in support of Israel. Arab Americans, who play a not inconsiderable role in deciding who wins Michigan this year, are defecting from him. And it's not like they're going to vote for Trump, who is obviously much more pro-Israel. But, you know, they can cost him this. They can help cost him at least that state. Of course, he's trailing to Trump in the polls anyway.
Correct.
But and of course, that's, you know, we're a long way away from November. But he's in a very difficult position. And that's why he keeps talking out of both sides of his mouth, trying to basically micromanage Israel's war effort in Gaza, forcing it. Whether it's all American influence or not, to conduct the campaign in such a way as to, they say to lessen Palestinian civilian casualties who were used as human shields by Hamas. But basically, this is endangering Israeli troops, as we've seen with the high casualty tolls. And that's the problem here. But at the same time, it's a C+. He hasn't cut off the flow of arms to Israel, which is necessary for the war effort to continue. So that's where we are with this administration. It could be much worse.
Yes.
Obviously, it could also be much better.
So I may be a lot more cynical than you are, and I don't see the world through such rose-colored glasses.
I think that the Biden administration is pushing Israel to end the war without victory. I think it's pressuring Israel to give the Palestinian terrorists a state of their own as a reward for killing 1,400 Jews. Do you still perceive Joe Biden and the Democratic Party, and I'm not just talking about Michigan, living in California, I know a lot of these Democrats as well. And do you still consider them to be perhaps misdirected, well-meaning friends of Israel? Or have they just completely gone off to the other side?
No, I mean it's more complicated than that. And listen, I take a very dim view, as I've just stated, of the intersectional wing of the Democratic Party, which is wholly on the side of the Palestinians and against Israel. Biden has always been a sort of friend of Israel. I've interviewed him, I've met him. He will wax lyrical about his support for Israel. He had many Jewish supporters. Zionists, people who were APAC, big givers who backed him because he could talk the talk about Israel. At the same time, even in years, he's lost a lot of those supporters, almost all of them, since he became Obama's vice president, I might add. But even back in the halcyon days of Biden, the senator, talking about how much he loves Israel. It was always he always loved Israel as long as Israel was doing what he wanted them to do. He's always been pressuring Israel back to the days of getting into confrontations with Menachem Begin, who
Oh,
told
I
him off
remember that,
rather royally, over 40 years ago,
yes.
to pressure Israel for a two-state solution, to make concession to the Palestinians. He'll say he loves Israel, he loves Netanyahu, but he disagrees with everything. So that kind of friend is better than no friend at all, clearly. As we've seen, just because it could be much worse. We could, he could have bowed completely to his left wing. So that's why, I'm deeply critical of Biden. And as I said, he set this up. But it could, he so far has stood his ground. Now, I agree with you that he's trying everything he can to get this war over with, because it's causing him major political problems. And if that means a victory for Hamas, he'll live with it, because he doesn't have to live with it.
Exactly.
It's that he's not, he can go home to his big house in Delaware. The hundreds of thousands of Jewish refugees, can't go home to their homes in southern Israel until Hamas is completely defeated. But the perspective we have to have about Biden and the Democratic Party is that, as equivocal a friend as Biden is and always has been, he is probably, almost, I would say almost certainly, the last pro-Israel Democratic president. The future of the Democratic Party is with the left. It's a generational divide. In general, it sort of is in America. That can be exaggerated, but it certainly is among Democrats. Any conceivable successor to him as a Democratic presidential candidate, whoever the Democratic candidate is going to be in 2028, we're a
Or
long way from
2024,
that.
we or
I have
2024.
enough trouble predicting next week, let alone
Exactly.
4 years from now. But
Exactly.
whoever the Democrats put forward in 2028 will be beholden to the left in a way that, that beggars what Biden is. And Biden has, other than sticking to support for Israel, barely, he's governed from the left. He has bought into, he among the worst things he did, if you want, if you can ask me one question, what's the worst thing Joe Biden has done as president? I would answer it is his executive orders putting DEI, the woke catechism of diversity, equity, and inclusion, in force within the government, the same way it is in every college and arts organization, so that there are now woke commissars throughout the federal government enforcing this noxious ideology and of quotas and lack and the opposite of equal opportunity. So he's been very bad, but what follows within the Democratic Party will be far worse, certainly for Israel and the Jews.
The AJ Steele Show will be right back.
You are listening to the AJ Steele Show, where no topic is off limits, no discussion too harsh, no truth more true. The AJ Steele Show, we tell it like it is.
All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl.
But let's get back to Israel for a second. And you were talking about refugees. Don't forget, there's a lot of refugees up in northern Israel.
Yes.
Because of Hezbollah.
Absolutely.
To me, it sounds like Israel is fighting for its life, both in Gaza and Lebanon. And in addition to having to battle these genocidal Muslim terrorists, it has to battle the UN, the European Union, anti-Semitic groups like UNRWA, and the Red Cross. Mm-hmm. Yes, the Red Cross. And most shockingly, the Democratic Party, and especially the new wing of the Democratic Party that you were talking about, it's almost like the Israelis are encircled in a political checkmate. Do you think that Israel can win this existential war? And how does it emerge from this battle? What does the future hold?
Well, you're exactly right when you list all these challenges. And if anything, we may have left out a few of them. It is a very difficult situation. But before we go into like delineating each one of them and why those are real challenges, there are possible solutions to some I don't know, but let me put this in perspective. This is actually a question I was just asked this the other night when I was giving a speech in Florida. And at this point, when people pose it sort of like the whole world is against us. We have all these things going, all these enemies. Israel surrounded both, territorially as well as intellectually and in the international community. How does it all end? It's all terrible. And my answer is have courage and have faith. Because whether you're, our age or someone older or someone younger, if you're a Jew or if you're someone who cares about Israel, a decent person, we have lived in an age of miracles. This is the most, as bad as things are right now. And since October 7th, I think everybody in the Jewish community, everybody who cares about Israel has been angry, frustrated, sad about what's been going on and what happened. And we're all struggling with that. But even with keeping that in mind and dealing with this real, real challenges and, maybe the worst in our lifetimes in terms of both anti-Semitism as well as the attacks on Israel. We're still the most fortunate Jewish generation of the last two millennia, maybe in history. The blue and white flag flies over Jerusalem and the land of Israel. Israel is not weak. Israel was caught unprepared, but people don't kill Jews with impunity, as Israel has shown. Israel's not defeated. Israel's nowhere close to being defeated. All of these enemies, all of their rhetoric is aspirational. They are not defeating Israel. Israel's still strong. Also, Israel still has friends in the United States. The majority of, as bad as it seems, if you read the New York Times and the Washington Post and watch CNN and MSNBC, well, I get paid to do it. I have to.
I see.
It seems like the whole of America is against Israel. That's not true. The overwhelming majority of Americans are for Israel, and not just Jews. I mean, everybody, the vast majority of Americans, support for Zionism is baked deep into the political DNA of this country. And that's not changing no matter what the intersectional left wants or what it says. So, whenever we sort of look at all the problems together, it can seem overwhelming. And, you can do that in your own personal life sometimes too. Take them one at a time, one war at a time. Israel has faced worse challenges than this.
True.
Throughout its 75 years. And it has succeeded. Nobody, 100 years ago, nobody thought that Zionism would succeed other than a few visionaries and true believers. As I said, we have people who have been alive the last 75 years have lived in an age of Jewish miracles. If we were interpreting this through a biblical narrative, we would all speak of all of this as a result of divine intervention. And maybe we should. I don't know. I'm a journalist. I deal with what I can cover with what is. I don't deal in sort of magical ideas or even the spiritual, but we have still lived in an age of miracles. Israel is strong. It's not going away. Now, you deal with each of these problems individually, it's like, so right now the problem is defeating Hamas. It's a terrible problem. It's a difficult military problem. But it, despite all the pessimism and the woe is me, and quite frankly, a lot of which is sort of an information operation being conducted by the Biden administration and sort of left-wing media, You know, Israel's not losing the war. The other side's losing the war. So let's take a deep breath and understand that, you know, the enemies of the Jewish people took their best shot on October 7th. They did unspeakable, awful things. And to some extent, they calculated correctly because they imagined that the sight of Jewish blood being shed would excite anti-Semites around the world and encourage anti-Semitism. And that is exactly what happened. And that's deeply disturbing, objectively. And it's especially disturbing to American Jews who thought they were living in a different kind of world, which is the majority of them. But even so, Israel is not defeated. It is not going to be defeated. And the majority of the Israeli people are behind this war. Everyone I speak to, soldiers, you know, the morale of the troops is, despite the difficult situation, still high because they know they're defending their homes and their families. It's an existential war, and they are not losing it.
So I agree. There is a Jewish renaissance. As a grandson of Holocaust survivors, I certainly understand that. What are your thoughts about the Iranians? Because they seem to be behind multiple attacks against American targets. Why aren't we taking them out? Why is Joe Biden or the Obama administration, whatever you want to call it, why are they coddling them?
Well, because that's been the mindset of Democratic foreign policymakers for the last decade or more. That was the whole point of Obama's signature foreign policy achievement. I use the word achievement in quotes, to really shift American foreign policy in the Middle East to a rapprochement with Iran, to move away from traditional allies like Israel and the Saudis. That was the whole point of the disastrous Iran nuclear deals, you know, completed in 2015, which, you know, was not going to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, was actually going to guarantee that they would get it. And to some, you know, Biden came into office determined, almost as a matter, as a reflex to reflex to revive it. And so, yes, of course, Iran is, you know, they were enriched and empowered by Obama's policies. They are making mischief throughout the Middle East and throughout the world, wherever they can. And, you know, their quest for regional hegemony certainly gained ground in the intervening years with their, you know, with their victories in Syria, their continued hold on Lebanon, their ability to make trouble in the Arabian Peninsula with the Houthis. So, yeah, I mean, they're all around troublemakers. They got richer. They got stronger. And it's only reluctantly is that Biden has and Blinken, the Secretary of State, and the rest of the people in charge of American foreign policy have been forced to face the fact that Iran is not going to play nice. You know, Barack Obama famously said that he was trying to give Iran a chance to get right with the world. They were not interested in getting right with the world. They were interested in conquering the West for Islam. And they're still, you know, despite their problems at home, that's still their goal. They think American weakness has given them the opening to do so. That's why they continue to, you know, fund Palestinian terrorism and to push the Houthis to take advantage of Biden's blunder in you know, basically pushing the Saudis to stop fighting them. Mm-hmm. And yes, they should be. The United States, even now, when the Houthis are threatening international shipping, In the Red Sea and the Horn of Africa, you know, it's like the United States is making restrained efforts to deal with that. I mean, people were talking about, well, what, you know, U.S. military invention. Well, that's when the U.S. Navy was invented 230 years ago, to assure freedom of the seas for shipping. So they've been slow and they've been weak in terms of defending U.S. interests. But eventually, you know, they're being brought to face to face with their obligation to do something about it. And hopefully, you know, if indeed, you know, they have at least until next January to govern this country and to be in charge of this. And we'll see what happens next year, who is in charge next year. If it is Trump and how we get to Trump after what I assume will be a Democratic insurrection if he actually wins the election. God knows, I tremble for the Republic no matter what happens in November. But sooner or later, Americans are going to be faced with the obligation, with the necessity to do something about Iran. That was the whole point of Trump pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal, because he understood we couldn't wait. And that was undermined by the Democrats. So here we are.
Well, one of my favorite sayings is, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Jonathan, this is a fascinating conversation, and with your permission, I'm going to take a short break, and we will be right back on the AJ Steele Show.
AJ Steele, not right, not left, just right.
My next question I have is about something that I find deeply troubling. I know that in Israel, there's a vocal minority of self-loathing lefty progressive types who get financial and tactical support from the Biden administration and folks like George Soros. But this minority of loudmouths is also backed by what I call the Israeli deep state, which is in many ways just like the deep state here in America. It's an amalgam of bureaucrats and the judiciary, industry, military, leadership, the media, and let's not forget academia. Now, Israel may be able to defeat the Arabs on a battlefield, but how can it survive this internal turmoil?
Well, you're right about the deep state in Israel. If anything, it's much more powerful than even the deep state here in the United States. The establishment in Israel, and we saw them flex their muscles prior to October 7th, in the battle over judicial reform. The sort of leftist Ashkenazi, you know, establishment, which, you know, has a stranglehold on academia, is the least of their possessions in Israel. They control the military and security establishment. They control the financial industry. They control the media. They control the legal profession and the judiciary, or at least most of it. And they were not prepared to let Netanyahu and the majority, you know, of Israelis through the Knesset that they had elected in November 2022, reform the system so as to allow a little more democracy and to, you know, prevent Israel from maintaining itself as a juristocracy. And truly it is. It is a country where it's not merely, you know, instead of legislative supremacy, or it's where the judges, left wing minority judges, you know, have hegemony over everything, and in ways that Americans, you know, many Americans who reflectively said, okay, that, you know, they say that, you know, the protest movement said they were for democracy, and this sort of was an echo of the arguments in the United States that Democrats accused the Republicans of being anti-democracy, which is, you know, nonsense, but, you know, it's just hyperbole at best. You know, it's the opposite. They were demonstrating against democracy, wanting to maintain, you know, the liberal elites, to maintain the control regardless of the election outcomes. And, you know, that's, you know, that is, you know, I don't know exactly how that turn plays out. I will say this, you know, we always have to, especially those of us like me who are in sort of daily journalism, we get caught up in the news cycle. Always. That's a mistake we always make. And it's hard to see long term. But the truth is, as Moshe Kapel, who was head of Kohelet, the foundation that provided a lot of the ideas behind judicial reform, said to me when I interviewed him on my podcast, he said, yeah, Netanyahu clearly doesn't have the support to push through judicial reform right now. But sooner or later, it's going to happen, because it's just demography. The left is losing ground in Israel. The majority is religious. It's right wing. You know, eventually it's going to happen. So this establishment will, you know, cannot maintain itself in the absence of broad-based support. And in the end, that problem, like so many other problems that Israel faces, I mean, Israel's always had, you know, just a plethora of, you know, existential problems. They work themselves out. That one will eventually work itself out. A lot of grief before that, but, you know, that can't survive indefinitely. There's no way.
Well, I hope you're right, because I think democracy is on the line.
Oh, yeah.
Jonathan, with your permission, I want to shift gears just a little bit before we end this interview. I think that the upcoming elections here in America are extremely consequential, not just for America, but for the rest of the world. What are your thoughts about where the American democracy is headed?
Well, as I said before, I tremble for this country no matter what happens in November, because we clearly do not have a consensus in terms of in the way we used to in sort of accepting the outcomes of elections. The Democrats didn't accept the outcome of the 2016 election, and they executed what I can only call as a soft coup. A coup attempt against Trump via the Russian collusion hoax and all the ramifications from that and the fake, all these conspiracy theories, the bogus impeachment over Ukraine. And obviously, Trump didn't accept the outcome of the 2020 election, even though certainly Republicans had reasons to, shall we say, be suspicious of the outcome because all the guardrails of election integrity had been thrown aside and because of COVID. But in the end, that the Electoral College had voted and, Biden was elected. And Trump did himself no good and did the Republicans no good by continuing to act as if that could be reversed. But now we have, this existential struggle where Biden is saying, and it's partly, it's just typical Biden hyperbole that, everybody on the other side is a fascist, and that, the Republicans are against democracy. As I've written, if anybody's against democracy, it's the Democrats right now, with their pro-censorship policies, with their attempt to decide this election through lawfare, throwing Trump off the ballot, prosecutions that are large. Completely at best ill-advised and at worst completely bogus, which are just banana republic territory. So, the truth is right now, if the polls, the polls today show Trump winning the election, winning it probably fairly, I'm not going to say easily, but winning it. I think the Democrats have been showing they will do anything to overturn it. So, what's going to happen after November, no matter what the outcome is bad. But I think there are real issues. If we can leave aside a lot of the, hyperbole and the really, senseless discussions about democracy. Neither party in this country is fundamentally opposed to democracy. We're not living in Weimar Germany. This is all political nonsense. To phrase it in that way, but we are living in the midst of a real existential struggle for the future of Western civilization and the future of and our democratic civic culture because of what I just alluded to earlier, which is DEI and woke ideology, which is fundamentally opposed to democracy and equality and the entire American ethic of liberty. And that is what is really should be on the ballot. That's what we should be discussing right now. And, we're not talking about it enough. I mean, interestingly, many in the Jewish community have woken up to the fact that DEI is a threat to them since October 7th because they can see all these woke activists chanting for genocide of Jews and engaging in open anti-Semitism. They belatedly realize what some of us, I'll say myself, have been writing for years that critical race theory and intersectionality and the whole woke mind, DEI mindset, grants a permission slip for anti-Semitism. Foolishly, some of them, including people like the ADL, who have totally, not done their jobs, they're morally and intellectually bankrupt, they want Jews to be included in DEI. This is wrong. DEI is bad for everybody. Jews can never be included in it because the DEI people think the Jews are white oppressors, which is a big lie. But it's bad for America. That's the thing that drives me the most. That's why I bring it up in every conversation and many, many articles and about a variety of different things, because that is the most fundamental question facing the American people. Do they want this ideology, which has taken hold through the long march of the, neo-Marxist progressives, through our institutions of academia, the media, the arts, And now the government under Joe Biden, can we, you know, it's rolling that back. Not who's president of Harvard or who's president of Penn or MIT, but can we roll back DEI? That's the real question facing America in 2024. And I hope we come to an answer about it. And we can't speak about it enough.
I fully agree with you, Jonathan. And it concerns me how much what is going on in Israel mirrors exactly what is happening here. As you can probably tell, I have a million more questions to ask you, but you're a very busy man and we can't go on forever. How can our listeners learn more about you and your work?
Well, you can go to jns.org. That's jns.org. Go to it, subscribe to our twice daily newsletters, which gives you the best and most comprehensive summary of Jewish news and opinion every day. Subscribe to our YouTube channel to see our various podcasts and videos, you know, which have interest in which both our website and our videos have grown exponentially in the last couple of years, and especially since October 7th. Go there and you can read me 3 or 4 times a week in JNS. Listen or watch my podcast and the podcast of my colleague, Caroline Glick. And my many other colleagues, you know, who are reporting the news about Israel and the Jewish world in a way that you won't get everywhere else, because it is without the filter of anti-Israel and leftist bias.
And finally, Jonathan, do you have some parting words of wisdom to share with the audience of the AJ Steele Show?
Well, I think the thing we have to keep in mind of the most important qualities, most important thing we must do for ourselves isn't necessarily just to be informed. I'm often asked by people, they say, how can I prepare my children to go off to college to face all the terrible things that are going on now? And what do we need to do? And part of the answer to that is to educate them, give them the about the myths and facts of the Middle East that they will be misinformed about when they get to college. We need to do that for ourselves as well, and to be willing and to have the ammunition with us, ready to hand to speak back and to contradict the lies about Israel and the Western canon. But there's something more important that we need, even more than the information, or as important as that is, and that is courage. Courage is the value that is most important, because without it, all the other virtues are meaningless. We must have the courage to speak truth to power, courage to speak back to university administrations, even to teachers, as difficult as that is for students to do. We must do it ourselves to speak back to the media, to the government. We cannot take this lying down. We must speak up for the rightness and the justice of our cause. And to understand that without the ability, the willingness to speak up for what is right, and to not simply lie down and let this woke, you know, ideology destroy the United States and overwhelm Israel and empower anti-Semites, you know, we will be failing. But there's something else we need as well, and that is faith. Not just faith in our religion, faith in Judaism, or faith in Christianity, if you're a believing Christian, but faith in justice, faith that we are in this together and that we shall not be defeated. It's so easy to lose faith in difficult times. And indeed, certainly for Jews since October 7th, you know, we're all dealing with the anger, the frustration, the sadness of these terrible events. And subsequent to that, all this terrible surge in anti-Semitism, which has turned the world upside down, especially for American Jews who thought they were living in a very different time and a different place from what they actually are living at. But we must have faith that these terrible things and these terrible people who are doing these terrible things, they shall not succeed. And if we have the courage and the willingness to take heart and to stick to our principles and to be willing to fight back every day in every way that we can, I have no doubt that in the end, and with God's help, we will prevail.
From your lips to God's ears. Jonathan Tobin, amen, right? Jonathan Tobin, thank you so much for coming on our show. May God bless you and keep you strong so you can continue doing the important work that you do. And I really hope that we get to talk again in better times.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for the work that you're doing as well.
all I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl. All I really want to be. All I really want to be is a guy that gets a girl.
The AJ Steele Show. Copyrighted 2024.